He tells stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca.
Good morning, Macca. This is Sharon Cadwallader, Mayor of Ballina Shire Council. I thought I'd just call in this morning to put a big shout out of thanks to everybody that's been so wonderful in the community, muscling up and helping in our clean up. Also with all the donations that are coming through, all the support has just been nothing short of staggering. So a big shout out of thanks to all the volunteers to what has been the most disastrous time in the life of the region. The true Aussie spirit just shines so brightly to do any type of volunteer work or be part of any recovery like we're in the thick of at the moment. It makes you feel good. I always think about my community work. I can't get that adrenaline rush on a ride at Dreamworld that I get by actually helping people. That's my analogy. When my family say to me, why don't you just quit after 18 years? I said, no, I'm hungry for more. Our worst hit areas have been South Ballina and all our little hamlets along there, like Empire Vale, Keith Hall, Pimlico, Wardell, Copter, Real Thrashing, and of course Broadwater, Woodburn, in Richmond Valley Council, Corakai. It has been devastating like nothing before, an unprecedented event that I hope we'll never see again.
When things have calmed down, Sharon, we're going to bring the program up there and do a program in Ballina, okay?
That would be wonderful. We would welcome you with open arms. And in the meantime, you keep up the great work that you do on this program.
They tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca. They all call it Sunday with Macca. Yeah, they all call it Sunday with Macca. Get on with it, Macca.
I will. Good morning and welcome. I've been running. How are you this morning? Lovely to be with you. All sorts of things this morning. Vince Sorrenti's coming in a little while. You know, Vince, he's a funny fella. And he's going to come in and say good day. As well as that, sorry, I've been running. I wanted to say that I've always said that poetry is the national pastime. I know that last Friday or Saturday, I told you about the Cloncurry Prize, which is a quite lucrative poetry prize run by the city of Cloncurry and their mayor up there, Greg. And it was won, I think. The announcement was made on Friday, was won by Brenda Joy Pritchard. There were over 200 entries. And speaking of poetry, we get lots of poetry. And once you start reading poetry, of course, you get more poetry, which is, well, it's lovely, but you can't read poetry all morning. I mean, and some of it's good and some of it's, you know, from the heart and all that sort of stuff. This is from Di Limbury. She says, hope you're aware that each Sunday across this amazing nation, your program continues to fill our lives with news and current and historic, sad, moving, uplifting and thought-provoking, all given with a small drop of good humour. As a resident of the hillside Lismore suburb, Gerrards Hill, or is it Gerrards? Not sure, Hill, the response of our own citizens as well as our community across the entire nation to our recent devastation has inspired this tiny piece. We've had a couple of calls from Lismore this morning. I'm going to go up there this week. I'll drop in a Ballina or two in a few places. Just do a light, just hello, and just wander around. Have a cup of coffee at huge expense, wherever. Price of coffee is, and that's just really a, we ought to talk about economics. Unbelievable, really. The cost of living and wow. Anyway, it's called Afterglow. Di Limbury's Afterglow. We are all of us imperfect in this less than perfect world. At times we will react to disasters nature hurled, but what is seen from outside belies what's deep within. A magic and a beauty lies just beneath the skin. A wisdom born of living, of laughter, loves and pain, of knowing how to comfort, to lie when you have lain, to recognise the best in you and help bring out that near, to lift you high and fill your heart with dreams that you hold dear. Those who felt with fear our ravaged planets roar, their hearts are filled with sadness, their minds will weep no more. The roar turns into whispers, away the waters creep, you grasp, hold tight your broken heart, those floodwaters can't keep. We help pick up the pieces of shattered lives and hearts. We can fit them back together, but can't find all the parts. You move through every day, a robot on two legs. Your spirit, close to empty, merely runs on dregs. Hands reach out, enfold you. Gently memories go, but hands that held you close leave a golden afterglow. Thank you, Di. As I said, we get lots of poetry sent to us, and that's nice. We always love the emails and letters that we get here. It's Post Office Box 9994. That's our mailbox. Post Office Box 9994, Sydney 2001. This is from Jennifer Drink, and it was about, she sent me a photo of the, you know, the weather vane that was stolen off the Mission for Seafarers in Melbourne the other week, made of copper, beautiful sailing vessel. It's a weather vane. You know, when the wind blows, it points in a certain direction. And what better place to have a wind vane on a Mission for Seafarers? And, of course, that's what the seafarers relied on, and still, the wind. Macca, this is a pic of the wonderful weather vane, says Jennifer, on the Mission to Seafarers. Surely someone in the know will have the sense to write this wrong. It's a wonder these thieves weren't seen. It could have been quite a project to remove this from its pride of place. It was. I couldn't put it on your Facebook page. Maybe you could do so. More people will see it, says Jen Drinken. We have. We will. And we did. My husband, Gary Deakin, says Sue Ellen, tried to call you last week from Manly. Thought you might like this picture. Can't wait to hear you. And there's a picture of the hubby in the phone box with a door, one of those lovely red phone boxes. And he's, oh, don't you love them? And they're free, apparently. And they mostly work, don't they, Kel? They still work. We've been talking about the Commonwealth Bank and all the banks taking away their ready tellers, money that you work hard for. They charge you $2.50, all those other ready tellers. It started when the Ken Henry was the boss of the Treasury or whatever he was, Reserve Bank, I'm not sure. But that's when they started to charge. And then some years back, the big banks took that off. So it was only other ones. When you went into a pub or anywhere, there was a ready teller that charges you $2.50 for the use of your money. But now the big banks don't charge you for the use of their, they just take them away. They just take them away, so you can't use them. Lots of, Macca, I heard that you mentioned B quad trucks. That's trucks with four dogs on your show. As a long time listener and as a driver of these great trucks, I thought I'd send you a couple of pics, says Steve Bish. Maxine's in Roma. Oh, I love Roma. Good morning, Maxine.
Hey, good morning, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. What's happening?
That's good. Well, look, I just thought it was interesting this morning. I'm heading out of town. Roma's quite flat, but I'm heading out of town to do some hill running this morning, and I thought I'll go to Macca's, get a coffee and head out. Most beautiful, beautiful sunrise this morning. Get pulled over by the police for a breath test, and I said, you know, is there a test for stupidity? And he said, why? And I said, well, I'm going out running this time of the morning. I said, but I'm listening to Macca, so the world's okay. And I got a Macca's coffee at the same time.
There you go, Maxine. How's things in Roma?
Look, we could do with a drop of rain, but it's been the most wonderful season. It's just magic, really. Beautiful autumn mornings, warmish days, bit of a storm on Friday afternoon. But we've had a pretty magic season, actually. Macca and cattle prices are great. Grain prices are pretty good. Land prices are through the roof. So we don't have any complaints. We when we look at our city cousins and things like that, and even with COVID, we've survived it, and I guess we've got plenty of fresh air and really good services. So, yeah, magic part of the world, Macca, really.
When I talk to gals like you, Maxine, and you're in Roma, I remember the last time I was in Roma, you know, because you've been around, but we haven't travelled for 2 years, really, so love to get back there. I remember having breakfast with a couple of friends in Roma 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And I don't know, it's something about being in a country town. It's just does it for me.
Well, Macca, I've, grown up here, and I often say to people, you know, Roma, being at the sort of intersection of all the highways, I guess, Roma would always have survived the ups and downs. And I worked for an oil and gas company and a teacher for 21 years and then moved into this industry because I believe that you can only make a difference from, you know, from the inside. You can be on the outside and beat your chest and say, well, why don't they do this and that? And, you know, put their money here or put their energies there. Well, when you're on, you know, when you can make a difference when you're on the inside, and I've seen a huge difference. But in our community, I always say that our community would have survived, but our community is thriving. We've got tourism and agriculture, the biggest cattle selling complex in the Southern Hemisphere. You know, really great. We're a really, really great community. And I think the amazing thing is that, you know, I'm in my 60s now and I can still walk down the street. And even though our town has changed and evolved in some ways, I'll still run into people that knew my father and grandfather and we can have a chat. So, yeah, it's pretty unique, a way of living, really. We have plenty of services.
That's, you know, that's what life's all about. Maxine, tell me a couple of things. Firstly, why are you going running?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. You sort of, I've run for years now, and I think in COVID, we worked from home, and I'm really lucky where I live. I've got a pathway sort of near me, and I think, well, I've got to make the best of this time. So I've been a runner for a long time, a short distance runner, and then I got into long distance running, and I did a marathon the end of last year, and this year I'm doing a half marathon once a month. And this is just a bit of a training run out in the hills, just out to the east of Roma. There's some nice little sloping hills and things like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a midlife crisis, but it could be seen as one, Macca.
The other thing, how much do you pay for your coffee?
Yeah, look, I was just saying, we hear all the rumours and it makes me really frightened. You know, you hear all the terrifying things of COVID, but I'm scared coffee's going to go up. But it's only $4.65 at Macca's in Roma this morning, and it's really nice coffee. Love it. And so far, we're just going to pretend that those rumours are elsewhere. And hopefully, I mean, it's around $5 a cup in Roma, probably, for, you know, the 12-ounce flat white, about $12. $5 a cup.
Yeah, well, it varies wherever you look. It's just interesting, isn't it? Just interesting, because everybody drinks coffee, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, and that's not that long, in the 1990s.
No.
Not many drank coffee, and now just about everybody drinks. It's the national drink, above beer and tea. When the price goes up.
My partner and I call you the Birdman, and he works on a property in at West, and he will say, "Did you hear the Birdman this morning?" He said XYZ because of all the bird noises. And so we fondly listen to you. It's the first thing I do. I walk through the house of a morning and a Sunday morning and flick on the radio and think, you know, all the stuff that goes on around the world, you tell the good stories of Australia. So that's amazing. I love the trucky stories because that's what my son drives trucks, and I often think that they keep the country going, don't they?
I'll say, Maxine, I'll see you in Roma. I'm going to get on the road this year. In the next 6 months, I'm going to go on the road and go to everywhere and try and do the program on the road, because I love that and I love talking to people like you. If we do a program in Roma, will you come along early in the morning and bring me a coffee?
I'll come along. I'll bring the coffee, you bring your joggers, and we'll go for a little run, Macca.
No, we won't.
Right, you have a wonderful day.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Jake's in Lismore. Good morning, Jake.
Morning, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate.
That's the way. I'd like to shout out to a couple of people and a couple of companies working in Lismore, cleaning up all the rubbish and the flood debris.
Uh-huh. Go for it. What do you do, Jake?
I drive a chain skip truck at the moment. We're running rubbish out to Lismore Tip each morning, every day, from 7 till 4. And, I'd just like to thank the military and a couple of blokes from Ben's Bins. One bloke named Clapper, another bloke named Cameron. They seem to be gunning it out. They're doing 20, 30 bins a day and working hard at it.
Give us a look at Lismore. Tell us, what's it look like?
At the moment, we're getting quite a few streets cleaned up. Otherwise, it still looks like a natural disaster zone. But okay, yeah, Lismore's coming together. There's a lot of people out there with good hearts and all getting in together, being a great community, just really hanging in there.
Are you a local, Jake?
I'm born and bred in Lismore. I currently live in Casino, so I'm doing everything I can for Lismore.
Did Casino get flooded?
Yeah, we were across the road, had about a foot and a half of water through their house. I was out till 3 o'clock in the morning in the four-wheel drive rescuing old people out of their homes. I was also on call for the fire services. So
it came up quickly.
Yeah, quicker than anyone could really expect or prepare for. Nearly got to 18 metres in Casino, which when it broke the banks, it come a fair way up there.
Gee.
So I've got – my sister lives in Lismore. She lost everything, but she's been out helping people and just doing a great job as well. So,
Jake, shout out to all the people who are still there working. And this will be months and months, probably years in the making, but – yeah, I suppose it gives us something to do, Jake, doesn't it?
Yeah, we'll be at it, I think, for easy 6 months, running rubbish for a while and just cleaning up. We've got a crew in town in a couple of bobcats. We've got 50 ADF soldiers helping us fill bins so we can get them out of town and out to the dumps. So,
good on you, Jake.
All right, cheers, Macca.
See you, mate. Thanks for your call.
See you, mate.
Bye.
All good.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. It's Fran here from Eltham. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Fran.
That's good. Macca, I just thought I'd like to ring in and let you know about a recent trip that we've just done to the UK and to Plymouth.
To Plymouth, yep.
Yeah, so our son is actually living there at the moment, and it's the first time we've been to the UK. We were lucky enough, obviously, to get there safely and get back, and I was... just wondering, I just thought I'd sort of let you know about the astounding history of Plymouth and also the really strong links that it has to Australia, because a lot of the ships actually sailed out of Plymouth to Australia. It's just such a beautiful old port city and steeped in just ridiculous history. Like, it was phenomenal. We loved it. But, yeah, just thought I'd ring up and let you know about that.
Well, it's obviously been an epiphany for you, Fran. Tell us all about it. I've never been to the UK or indeed to Plymouth.
No. Well, it's our first time to the UK. We hadn't seen our son for over 2 years because of the COVID restrictions, and he's currently living over there playing rugby union. And we decided when Scott Morrison announced that we could actually get out of the country, we decided the next day to... buy tickets, which we did last year, and then we flew out mid-January this year. We surprised our son. He didn't know we were coming, so that was really lovely. And we got on and explored the Plymouth area, the Cornwall area, and it's just, Plymouth is just lovely. It's blue stones. It's got a working naval base, and it was the... I think it was the most bombed, like Hitler kept trying to actually bomb Plymouth. And because the fog would actually settle on the water, what they would do was to actually stop the Germans from bombing even further. They would send out these boats that had heath on smoke or heath that was smoking. All and right. So it would actually cause like a layer of fog so that the Germans couldn't actually... bomb the naval base. So, but it's an amazing, amazing little city on the coastline of the UK, and the people were amazing. They were really friendly, really relaxed, and it was sort of a breath of fresh air coming from our uptight COVID restricted Australia. So, yeah, it was lovely. It was a really nice break.
That's what my friend said who works here, Liz, said about... She was English. She went back to England and said, it was lovely, just like you're describing. And then she came back to Australia and this was four or five months ago, and she couldn't believe the difference, you know, how sort of uptight we were. In lots of ways, you need to be uptight. You know, you need to be aware. But from the way we're used to living our lives and pottering around doing what we want to do, it's a... Quite a change. Tell me, who's your son playing for? And is that a job? Is it? He's playing for a professional rugby?
Well, it's semi-professional. He's contracted with Plymouth Albion, which is in the UK. The name skipped it now, whichever league it is. It's the second down anyway. It's the second tier. So, yeah. So he's decided to try and play his hand over there, and good luck to him. It's My hat goes off to him. He works hard. So, yeah. So, but he's also completed a degree in marketing and business advertising too over in the US. So he hasn't been home. He hasn't been home for a long time. So, yeah.
There you go. Well, yeah, I'd love to go and see all the British things with sailing and ships and, you know.
Oh, he would love it.
And Harrison's clock and all that sort of stuff. It'd just be a wonderful journey in the UK. But I don't know. I'm stuck here in lots of ways, and I like it here. But you know, one day.
Yeah, it was nice to come home. I must admit, you know, you never don't want to come home. And I know even our son does want to come home, but it was just a breath of fresh air to be a little bit less restricted. And I must admit the British people are a lot more relaxed because they're a lot further on in this COVID sort of environment than we are. So I think we'll get there. But I must admit, it was like chalk and cheese. It was really, really evident how uptight we are and how relaxed they are. So it was very, very evident.
Yeah. We've got a story in our All Over News about COVID here in Australia. The cases are up, I think, 19,000 cases.
Yeah. And
so you've got to be vigilant, but she's, yeah.
Oh, 100%. And I think we were over there when Boris Johnson actually gave the order that no mask needed to be worn inside. And I must admit, people still wore their masks inside. We certainly did because we knew we were coming back home. But I think it's all about choice and your own responsibility. It's taking responsibility for yourself. And that's what I was seeing over in England, was that out on the street, you choose to either go out or not. You choose to wear a mask or you don't.
Yeah.
And things were picking up and people were just grateful for being able to start living their life again. So I think we're going to get there. We will get there, but people are still a little bit scared. And I understand that 100%. I work in the disability industry, so I understand that. But, you know, just, I don't know. It was just nice. It was refreshing. It was nice to see our son too, obviously. So,
yeah.
And Plymouth and Cornwall are, boy, they're amazing places. They're beautiful.
Well, I'll have to go there. Fran, I was looking at the football. I just noticed, I don't watch a lot of football, but I noticed that in Melbourne, the crowds were back at the G, and I thought that was fantastic. And Melbourne's always, to me, been much more vibrant, and especially in this COVID time, the city of Sydney really is a disaster area in terms of what it used to be. And I think there's no good having a city unless it's full of life and music.
Correct.
And food and all that sort of stuff. Melbourne does that much better, even though you've been through hell in lots of ways, but with lockdowns. But it seems to the Melbourne people have got out and they're back doing things, looking after themselves. And I hope that can happen in Sydney, because it's been a great city, but the CBD is now like a disaster area, I find.
Yes, yeah. Well, I must admit, we were out in the city last weekend for a show, and still asking to show vaccination certificates, which I think is great. But there was the place was alive. It was really bustling. It was a busy city last weekend. So, yeah.
See you in Plymouth, Fran.
Okay, enjoy. Go to the Gin Factory. It's fabulous.
All right. Good on you.
Take care. Have a lovely Sunday.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Guess who's with me this morning? Vince Sorrenti turned up. He's been trapped in a lift for 5 minutes and is thinking of jumping off the balcony. Vince Sorrenti, great comedian, and I want to talk about comedy, and we're going to talk about The Bridge with him, and all sorts of things. How are you, mate?
Good morning, Mac. I'm so chuffed to be on your show. I listen to your show when I'm driving around or travelling home from a gig, and it just feels like the real soul of Australia, and it's great. I mean, I did have a bit of difficulty getting in here, but I'm here now drinking the weakest coffee I've drunk in Australia since 1978.
And
thank you.
And the beauty of it is it didn't cost you $7.50.
It's very... I mean, the Commonwealth Bank in my area too, they're all the same. I walked into the bank the other day to open a get a debit card for one of my sons.
Yeah.
And it was almost like they're staring. It's like such an imposition. Why are you here? What do you do? You've come to waste our time. I'm very sorry to be banking with you.
And in country towns, of course, we had people reach. They left. Now we have to drive 110 k's to the next town to go to the bank, and or the Bendigo banks open up or something. I don't know. There's something doesn't work. As I think I said before, to do business in Australia, whatever you do, is a sort of a bit of a privilege. And if you make money, that's fine, and whatever your business is. But surely there's you need to return that in some sort of a way. And
not everyone's on the internet, mate. I mean, my poor dad. Here's a segue for you. I mean, he wouldn't know how to log onto his net bank or whatever his bank happens to be. He still pays his electricity bill in cash and goes down to the post office and does what he has to do.
I'll tell you, the last time I saw you, and it's the first time I saw you, was, 15, 20 years ago, and I was invited to it was a football, celebration or something, and you turned up.
Okay.
And you told a gig, and I use it myself all the time, and you told a gag, because I love comedy. The first, when I went to America in 1977, And in 1977, comedy was sort of just the new thing. It wasn't a new thing. I mean, you'd had Shelley Berman and Bill Cosby and all that sort of stuff, and we bought records, and you don't have to be Jewish, but it helps, all those sort of things. Yep. You get the LPs, which are great. But I went to the Comedy Store in LA.
Fantastic place.
Yeah, and this is in 77 or seven, just in 78, Christmas sort of New Year. And I pinched the thing when we left, because there was a paper on who was on outside, and when I left, it would be at 3 a.m. or something. Nobody's there, and it's got David Letterman, Jay Leno, and all these famous people were there, but they weren't famous then,
It would have been an emerging Robin Williams soon after that too.
Well, I'll tell you who was there too. Barry Humphries was standing up the back.
No
and Robin
way.
Williams, yeah, he was standing up the back.
Incredible.
I said, look, there's Barry Humphries up the back watching the proceedings, because it was about the Comedy Store in LA, and it's blossomed now. And then
I've never laughed so hard in my life as one night at the Comedy Store, and I'm going back to the mid-80s now. I saw a guy called Sam Kinison who sadly died in the late 90s, and he was so funny. I couldn't even sit down, Macca. I was standing at my table, slapping the table. Seriously, it was just the biggest laugh I've ever had in my life. It's so good for you.
Yeah, and I saw Norm Henderson a couple of times on Letterman, because I loved Letterman.
I love Letterman too.
Yeah, I loved him because he's not a great comedian, but he was just a great interviewer. When he interviewed people... he wasn't all out. He just, I loved his interviewing, but, and then he'd give little odd spots. He had these little fun facts, and he'd say, fun fact number two, an ant never sleeps, and stuff like this. And then he'd say, bananas are a great source of skins, because everyone said, oh, yeah, bananas and potassium. He's just taking the mickey out of people who say, oh, here's kale and chai and bananas are great for skins. Lovely stuff. But you've done this for how long, Vince?
Mate, I've been going about 40 years. I started when I was a uni student.
You started at school.
Well, probably. Maybe even earlier if you ask Mum and Dad. My school didn't really have a lot of avenues for comics or actors or whatever. I went to Bankstown Boys High. They used to search us for knives. If you didn't have one, they gave you one. It was that kind of stuff. The first question at every trivia night was, what are you looking at? It was a great school. And, my kids have sort of got every privilege in the world. They go to sort of private schools and have everything laid on for them. But I reckon they're missing out on something. I went to a Bankstown Boys High, got a great public education, and went on to Sydney, studying architecture. And got involved in the university reviews.
When were you there?
79 through to 85, 6 years architecture. Mm. Mm. But I started doing comedy halfway through. Someone had seen me in some of the reviews, and the Comedy Store had just opened, and they were looking for people. And it's started. So my last 3 years at uni, I was working at night and touring around the country even.
So the architecture didn't grab you?
I'm a graduate, but I love architecture. But let me just say, Mac, you're probably a lot safer listening to me on stage than sitting in one of my buildings. It should be left to the extraordinarily gifted, I say, architecture.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I had a note from Vince during the week, and he says, wanted to share a little tidbit with you that might resonate with people this weekend, because yesterday, as well as the ABC celebrating 90 years this year, 1932, must have been a big year, the Harbour Bridge was opened in 1932. Yeah. And you've got a lovely story about your dad and the Harbour Bridge.
He's born on the same day, Macca.
Really?
19th of March, 1932.
Uh-huh.
So we had a 90th celebration for him yesterday. And that always resonates with him. He loves stories about the bridge. In fact, we climbed the bridge on his 75th birthday and got some snaps. And that was on the Kerri-Anne Kennelly show, actually, from the top of the bridge with Frank Sorrenti. Hello, Dad. I know you're listening this morning. But he wasn't born in Australia, of course. He was born in Cirello, a little town in southern Italy, in Calabria. Ucireu, they call it in the local dialect. And he came out here. He was 20 years old, 1952. And you can imagine, I love this city, and I just love stories about, you know, the history of Sydney. And he came here at that time. The tallest building in town was the Martin Place Commonwealth Bank building.
Right.
10 stories, which is probably 8 stories taller than he'd ever seen. Yeah. You know what I mean? But sort of, you know, dancing at the Trocadero and walking around through the Domain in their suits on Sundays. He lived in a boarding house near Wynyard Station with 80 other blokes, and they had 2 kitchens. They have to queue up to do their cooking in the evenings. He had all sorts of odd jobs. One of his early jobs was, because he was a very good fruit picker from his time in Italy, and him and a mate caught the train out to Mildura, the overnight train.
Right.
And they've shown up in the morning there, and the farmers are all there with their pickups, and I'll have you. And so him and his mate got on the back of a truck, got taken to this bloke's property, and, no one spoke much English, and the farmer was sort of indicating to him, oh, you guys hungry? You want some breakfast? And they sort of nodded their heads, yes. So the farmer's wife's brought out these trays with bowls of cornflakes on them, and they've started to eat these cornflakes, and they go, geez, I can't handle this food, Frank. But they didn't realise you had to put milk in the cornflakes. They're just eating this dry sort of cereal. He soon learned, because he loves meat. I mean, you didn't get a lot of meat in southern Italy. So, you could eat meat 3 times a day. People were eating meat for breakfast in Australia, which he thought was fantastic. They led a very healthy diet in southern Italy, mate. They mainly ate pulses and grains and fruit and vegetables and goat milk. They would have eaten meat 2 or 3 times a year. You know, we call it veganism. You know, they called it poverty. But they were great. Look, I love the stories from that time. You know, and my mum's dad, he would they lived in Hurlston Park here in Sydney, and in those days you'd remember that cars, not many cars had indicators, had blinkers. So people would pull up to a corner and they're going to turn, they'd put their hand out the window and signal, and he would say, well, these Australians are the friendliest people in the world. I stand on the corner, is it not a car goes by without having a wave? He would stand on the corner just waving at people all day. I mean, wonderful stories about the immigrant experience. Migrants come to this country, they cross oceans to be Australian.
Yeah.
You know, they embrace this country.
Yeah.
This is a great country, mate. Yeah. Mate, you know, look, I feel bad for the people in, you know, flood affected areas this morning, but how lucky are we, mate? I mean, we're not sitting in our garages and making Molotov cocktails. We're a free, democratic. It chokes me up.
I know. I'm talking to Vince Sorrenti, ladies and gentlemen. He's a comedian, but he's crying. But the other thing is, you hear all these lovely stories about that very experience about fruit picking. And I remember this bloke, big long arms, tall people, you know, play basketball. You got to be tall to be a swimmer. But the best fruit pickers were these big, tall blokes. I mean, that's the exception that proves the rule, of course. But this bloke used to, him and his mate, they'd go down picking and they'd, you know, they'd pick pears and they'd just, and then they'd finish the fruit and off to Queensland and they'd be cutting cane. And I've got some Greek friends and relatives. They went cane cutting and up, and the Italians and all up and down the East Coast and into South Australia picking. And they're lovely stories. They're lovely stories. And they're like, you know, they're like Thorpe in terms of, you know, just because you're picking fruit and not swimming the 100 metres, they're just as good. I mean, they'd be fantastic. They'd be training and training, and they'd be – to watch a gun fruit picker is like a work of art, mate.
Yeah, well, you won't see it. It didn't hand it down through the generations in our family, mate, because I'm absolutely bloody hopeless in the garden, seriously. But my dad is a – my dad can grow basil out of cracks in the concrete, mate. I'm flat out having a lawn.
Well, and that's you know, we need to be able to do that. I mean, that was the whole Australian experience. Whether there were migrant, you know, my grandpas and stuff, they were, you know, the backyard was full of potatoes and rhubarb and, you know, all sorts of stuff that I wouldn't eat. But
you can't just have a lawn, mate. You got to produce a yield, even if you're living in Concord, like with that in suburban Sydney. You got to produce something off your land.
And then I suppose with the price of everything now, I think it just makes sense to be able to grow. But nobody's got a backyard anymore. That's the trouble. No. We're all living in high rise.
And chooks. I mean, my grandfather, my dad's dad, had a house in Hurlston Park. And, mate, it was like living in the bush. I mean, you'd go over there on a Sunday and you'd come home with, you know, you'd come home with a dozen eggs. Mm. He'd give you a half a case of peaches off his tree. He'd be growing basil, tomatoes, garlic, broccoli. He'd be making his own soap and big cauldrons.
Really?
I mean, you'd come home with packets of, I mean, it was absolutely unbelievable. This is on a, he's backed onto the railway, so they'd be picking fennel. And, I mean, honestly, anything a heart could desire was grown and produced on his quarter acre block.
And this is the best restaurants do that now. They have their own little plot out the back and they run out and pick some fennel and sprinkle some olive oil and some pepper on it, and
there you go. 200 bucks.
Vince, this is from Margaret Macker. I heard you say you'll come up to Ballina next week. Oh, I'm going to try. Would love to meet you. I work at Ballina NRMA. We are servicing customers, hearing their heartbreaking rescues and loss. It's overwhelming. I'm the one that knitted your Anzac blanket a couple of winters ago. Oh, I've still got that. I have. I sit on it because it's on my chair at home because the chair's hard. So I sit on the blanket. That's in the summer months. In the winter, I put it over my knees.
Come on, Mac. Actually, you are a lot younger in real life than you sound on air, I've got to say. Yeah.
Really? Do I sound old, do I?
Well, you sound stoic. You sound impressive, wise.
Stoic. Yeah. Oh, dear, oh, dear. We'll talk to you quickly. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. This is Vicky ringing from Yarra Junction in Victoria.
Hi.
And I just heard Vince mention about soap, and I thought I'd give you a call because I've just gone into business with my sister, and we are proudly manufacturing in Australia, in Victoria, the old-fashioned soap shakers where, you know, you put your bar of soap in the cage, it's got a handle. Yep, and we've just started a couple of weeks ago, and I just thought I'd ring you up and let you know about it.
Vicky, was this a need that you saw walking the streets? You think I'm going to make soap shakers?
A lot of dirty people in that party.
No, and I do walk the streets, but only to get fit. But anyhow, no, look, there's lots of stories with this business starting, and one of them was my 98-year-old mother who passed away a few years ago. We still have her soap shaker, and it's got to be 50-plus years old. And during COVID, my sister lives in Queensland, and during COVID, we talked about it a lot, and we thought, no, we're going to bite the bullet and we're going to do it, but we want it to be Australian-made. Anyhow,
champion.
Another story connected with it is that my son played Aussie Rules for Alinda Fernie Creek, and the sponsors of Alinda Fernie Creek Football Club were Garden City Plastics in Dandenong. Anyhow, I got a contact number for them, got onto a great guy called Ben who helped us so much because we had no idea, and they manufactured in Dandenong. And another family-owned Australian company. All our suppliers that we use, all Australian.
Well, you're a little champion. I'm not sure. I mean, this is the first time I've thought about a soap shaker since I was, you know, 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, I know. But
excuse my ignorance, Macca. What is a soap shaker?
It's got a little handle on it. It's a little cage, and you open it up, and then you put your cake of soap in, and then you put it in, and you clip it, and then you put it in the water for your washing up, and you shake it, and you make suds and stuff, and then
amazing.
That's the story, isn't it? It used to be metal.
Ours is plastic, but our plastic can be recycled, and also it's an alternative to not using liquid detergent in plastic bottles.
Rita's in Collaroy in Sydney. Good morning, Rita.
Oh, good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm very well.
That's good. Oh, look, just listening to Mr. Sorrenti there talking about his dad, it's just brought back a flood of memories. I was been in tears all morning listening to you guys.
That's a shame. Sorry about that.
Happy tears, you know, like my parents migrated from Italy as well, a little bit further north from Vince's father. But, you know, the experience, Dad never went to the fruit picking fields and stuff like that. He was at Bonegilla for a couple of months in one of the migrant camps there before he came to Sydney. And he tells the story that, like Vince was saying, you know, you ate meat once a year, perhaps probably on Christmas Day or something, and they saw rabbits running around everywhere. So my father said to, well, I suppose cook in those days, if we caught some rabbits, would you cook them for us? And he said, sure. And there was like about 80 people in this migrant camp at the time. So got a few mates together, some Greeks and some Italians with him, and they went out and caught all these rabbits. I don't know what they would have been like. I mean, they were wild.
That'd be lovely, I reckon.
And, so they must have caught about 20 of them or something and, you know, skinned them and did what they did. And they gave them to the cook to cook. And they said they'd never eaten anything like that in their lives. I mean, they threw some potatoes and carrots in with it. And they said it was the most amazing meal they'd ever had in their life. So it just brought such a flood of memory. And my dad worked on the Reserve Bank building when it was being built back in 1961, because Dad came out in 58, and then my mum, 57, and my mum came out in 58. But both my sister and I were born here, and we bless our dad's name every day for coming to Australia. And so I know what Vince was talking about, you know, with the little garden out the back. Dad could grow a weed and it blossom into some beautiful fruit tree, or lettuce and cabbages and corn. Oh my gosh, we had rabbits and chickens and pigeons, and you know, it was just amazing. We lost Dad 19 years ago to the dreaded.
Did you do the salami, cancer. Rita? Did you?
The prosciutto and the sausages.
I mean,
and the tomatoes, people
go on these gourmet tours now to Italy and to go and experience. People were doing it in suburban backyards in Australia
The
50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, and you know. That film, Looking for Ella Brandy.
That was 2 weeks ago. It was Passata
classic.
Day. Yeah. In fact, if Albo becomes the Prime Minister, we might have the first Italian Australia. That should be Australia Day, doing the tomatoes in the backyard. And
it
I tell you what, the front yard at the Prime Minister's lodge is in big trouble too. That could get concreted.
Oh, I know. Well,
This is the thing.
But, you know, it was and you know, my dad was one of the first ones to even understand what was going on TV in 1960, when my paternal and maternal uncles came out to cut sugar cane up in Queensland. Dad had bought a 3-in-1 in those days, had a TV.
Oh, we had one of those.
And they were amazed that Dad could read a newspaper, because Dad learned English through records. And, to again, bless his name, it was Dad that taught my sister and I about Ned Kelly, about the Aborigines and the Dreamtime.
Isn't that amazing?
It was incredible.
Rita, I love saying your name because that's my late mother's name. My dad was a very quick learner. He learned to speak and write English very early on, naturalised as soon as he possibly. He was so good at English speaking and writing that if you wanted a job in the railways, right, Dad ended up working in the railways in New South Wales.
So did my father. They maybe even knew each other.
Well, maybe. Well, Dad would go along and sit the test for you. Like if you, he was just because there was no ID test in those days. You just walked in. Yeah, my name's Bruno, whatever, you know. And,
you wonder
why this state rail is in such a perilous state, mate. All these people getting jobs on false pretenses.
Well, Dad worked on the railways for about 4 or 5 years, and then decided to go back to Italy. You know, we were going to go back and.
Oh, you guys went back.
Blah, blah, blah.
You went back.
We did, unfortunately, and mind you, 9 months later. Nine months later, we were back in Australia. It
there
was really crazy times. But just one more thing. My dad was also born in 1932, and he loved Australia so much. Like I said, you know, he taught us all about... and even
what was his name, Rita?
Antonio. We called him... or they called him Tony. And he was the one that even told us about Thunderbolt. And I thought, who the hell is Thunderbolt?
Isn't that amazing?
He loved bush rangers. I don't know why, but he knew all the stories, and he taught me about Egypt and England. Oh my God, what my father didn't know. And he left school when he was 11. So, you know, he did a little bit
same
of
same as my dad. 10 years old, he was my dad.
Rita, yeah, there's a synergy between you and Vince here this morning.
They loved the country,
thank you so
Rita.
Much. They
absolutely loved it. The whole origin of Sorrenti's being in Australia was we had a friend of the family's who was a POW out there at Cowra during the Second World War, and they treated them so well, the Italian prisoners.
Yes.
I mean, they worked in the local farms and fell in love. Yes. I mean, like it was just like leading wonderful lives.
Yeah.
When the war ended, they said, "Well, you've got to go back to Italy." He said, "Oh, I don't want to go back to Italy."
Exactly. My father came out sponsored, just in that late 50s era, or that from the 50s, even a little bit before after the war, but during that 50 to 60 period, Dad was assisted, and then he brought my mother out, because Dad was only married 3 months, and then, you know, came out, and then my mother came out, and then my sister and I and all the rest of it. But it was, Dad just said, I've got to get out of Italy. It's just, and plus, what he said, because he's the eldest in the family, he said, I have to leave something behind for my siblings, because there's no other way to do it. So Jay came out, and then a couple of his brothers came out and went back and all the rest of it. But a lot of people did that. The eldest or the second, you know, the first couple, the two eldest ones would go away to leave, make room for the others to get ahead in Italy. And that's exactly what happened. But Dad never once regretted coming to Australia, although he did say, you know, I want to get back.
Becca's given us the wind-up here, Rita. I think you and I need to write a book together.
No worries, Vince. Thank you so much for talking to me. The memories are beautiful. Stay safe, and thank you again.
Good on you, Rita.
Bye.
Bye.
G'day, it's Kevin. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Kevin.
Well, yeah, I'm just from Bilpin in the Blue Mountains, and I'm heading up to the Northern Rivers to sort of have a reconnaissance trip and in helping out. So sort of semi-retired builder, so I thought I might go up and see what I can do.
Well, I'm sure there'll be plenty to do, mate. That's a good idea, but there'll be others up there. But I think there's lots of work to do from the calls we've had this morning, Kevin.
Yeah, well, look, it's funny, coming from Bilpin, you know, we've had our fair share of, you know, natural disasters
fires.
The last few years.
Yep.
This time I'm bringing a present of apples from the fruit growers up there, because they've had a slow selling season, so maybe some of the fruit will go to waste. So I thought we'll move some of that up north, and I'm also bringing heaps of like power tools and stuff to give away, because you know, just some of our old stock of power tools, you know, up there they're trying to rebuild, and a lot of them have lost their tools, so they can't even rebuild, and of course the workforce is very thin on the ground.
Aren't you a good bloke? That's a wonderful thing to do, mate. I'm going to try and get up to Lismore, so I don't know if you'll be up there this coming week. I'm going to try and get up there, so I'll look you up. We got your number, haven't we?
I'll be there this week. So I was born in Lismore, so that's kind of like the drawback, I suppose, as well. You know, but I've been in Bilpin 50 years, but it's kind of going to be good to go back there and help out.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, mate. The apples sound nice. Been much of a year for apples?
Well, I think the sugar content might be a bit low in some of them due to a bit of lack of sun, but there's plenty of fruit and there's not many buyers. So if anybody from Sydney wants to go and spend a sunny day picking apples, now the sun's come back, it's the time to do it. Otherwise, you know, we might see a lot of produce go to waste, which would be a shame.
Yeah, exactly. So you sort of retired, have you said, Kevin? You're semi-retired?
Yeah, just sort of like to stay a bit lighter on our feet. We do a bit of travelling, and listen, I and we... Last year, we sort of were lucky to escape New South Wales just before the COVID shutdown and got our way over to the Gibb River, to the Kimberleys. And so we do building work in spurts, and then we sort of travel, and when we can, it's kind of nice to be able to help people out. It's good to be able to position yourself like that, you know?
Yeah. And who's going to replace people like you, Kevin? Have we got young builders coming through?
Well, I've had a couple of apprentices, my last one being my son, and I'm pretty proud of the way he's taken up. But that's a really good point that you make, Macca, because I couldn't stress or encourage people enough to take on the responsibility of taking on an apprentice like and put back in the industry as was given to you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I think too, because, you know, we've got more and more people and more building of all sorts going on, whether it's high rise or houses. I prefer a house and stuff, and I think a lot of people would prefer a house, but and there's lots in country towns. There's I don't know anything about it, but it just seems to me there's just scads and scads of work to be done, and we need lots of apprentices and lots of, you know, trainee apprentice builders and carpers, chippies and all sorts.
Indeed. You know, look, it's incredible the labour shortfall throughout the country. You know, when travelling back from west to east, you know, in the 6 months of last year, you know, in every town there was, you know, work available signs, especially in trades, you know, everything from chefing, you know, it's, you know, the nurses are short, the teachers are short, everybody's short. The country's like 300,000 short in the workforce. So there's plenty of work there. But if everybody takes responsibility in teaching and training and showing the young people a bit of direction, then I reckon can't go wrong.
I might see you up there in Lismore, Kevin, with a bit of luck.
Indeed. All right. Well, good luck. And it's been many years I've been listening to your show and the first time I've spoken, and I appreciate it.
Very, very nice, Kevin. I'll look forward to meeting you.
All right. Catch you.
See you, mate. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.
Yeah, Benny, I can't hear you very well. Speak up.
There we go. How's that?
That's a lot better.
Lovely. Yeah, mate, I thought I'd give you a call. You don't get too many calls from WA.
Well, it's the time. This is bloody daylight saving. I can't stand it. But anyway, go on.
That's right, yeah. I've just started work for the day, just transporting some biosolids for the Water Corp up to the farms for the wheat and canola crops. So it's an interesting trade, this one.
Tell us about it. What is it?
So it's biosolid. So it's basically all the poo, basically, that gets transported through the pipes and everything down to the wastewater treatment plants, and they basically highly process it, and we transport it up to the farms, and it gets spread out on the crops before they seed. So it's all safe and everything, but I certainly wouldn't have known about it if I hadn't have got the job. So.
So how long have you been doing that? So where does it go to?
So we transport it about 2 hours north of Perth, just out to the wheat belt there. I've been doing it since October last year. So I've been in trucking for a few years. But, yeah, this job came along, and I thought it's good job security, because I don't think everyone's going to stop pooping anytime soon.
Well, probably not, Benny. Probably not, no. I think you're on a good thing there, yeah. Go on.
Good wicket. So, yeah, but I enjoy the show, mate, and because, I've started working weekends now, and, yeah, it's good to hear a few yarns from everyone around the place.
Oh, that's what makes it, Benny. So how's things in Perth? You've been hot for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, we had a few weeks there. We were sort of constantly sort of hitting the 40-degree mark and a bit above. It was, pretty full on. We had some... a few fires around the hills of Perth and everything as well, which were a bit worrying, and down south as well. But luckily the emergency services, they got on top of those pretty well. So, it's just starting to cool down now. It's sort of, today's going to be about 31, I think, and we might have a bit of rain this morning, but it's starting to cool down, which is nice.
You wouldn't realise, Ben, that people here gather in groups, certainly on the East Coast, where it seems to rain nearly every day, waiting for a glimpse. Sometimes the sun pokes its little face through and we gather and say, look, there's the sun. I think because it's been... and somebody said that where's our weatherman's piece. He said, I think he said that La Nina may, this is not, you know, but he said it may continue into 2023. So that's charming news. Because I figure on the East Coast, I mean, you get West Coast, you get your rain in winter usually, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. And we sort of, the last couple of winters have been a bit, we've had some sort of one or two heavy storms, but other than that, I think the average rainfall has been a bit down, you know, certainly compared to you guys over that way. So,
yeah, well, I think we had a year like this some time ago, maybe 20 years ago, where we had a wet summer, but not as wet as this one, but we had a wet summer, and then that just sort of continued into winter where it wasn't that wet, but nothing dried out because it's cool and cold. So a lot of, what did the lady say in our quarter to eight news? She said whiskery mold grows on everything. I remember taking my guitar out of the case after about, you know, 4 weeks not using it, and it had all up the fretboard. It was all had little moldy things growing on.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you can rub it off.
Don't have that problem here.
Oh, well, stay tuned. Watch this space.
That's it.
Good on you, Benny.
Thanks, Macca. Have a good one.
Bye.
Oh, g'day, Macca. Doug here on St George's Basin. How are you going?
Oh, that'd be a nice place to be, Dougie.
Oh, it is, mate. It's really one of those calls where I was just ringing up to just say how good the morning is and just share it with everyone.
Are you in it or on it or at it, the basin?
On the boat right now, floating on the basin. My son's standing next to me casting away, and we're in a fishing competition, a father and son fishing competition.
Oh, good on
you. A mate of ours is a school principal in the Sutherland Shire. He organises it, and it's a social comp, and we come down here every year, and we vie away for the biggest fish, different species, all that kind of thing. And this morning's just absolutely on fire down here. It's just such a cracking morning.
Isn't that lovely? Is the sun's out, of course, obviously.
Sun's out, just a nice light westerly, and 20 odd degrees, just about as good as it gets. And the fish are biting too.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Love a feed of fish. Dougie, what do you do?
I'm a builder.
Oh, are you?
In Sydney, residential builder.
Did you hear
Kevin?
Kevin going up to Lismore with his apples and stuff?
I did, yeah. I thought, what a great thing to do, you know, as a retired builder. You know, there's so much knowledge and skill there. And if you can share it with people, it's just such a great thing, isn't it, you know?
Should be more of it, mate. Should be more of it. And
you guys were talking about, you know, who the next stock of builders is that's going to come through and fill his shoes. It's a valid concern, you know. Not a hell of a lot of young guys willing to get into the trade and give it a good crack. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward, because there is just so much work out there particularly at the moment.
Well, I've got, you know, as usual, I've got there's things to do around my joint, and all I seem to do is work. I come in here nearly every day of the week, mostly. I'm going to go away. I'm going to go up to Ballon and Lismore and have a poke around and talk to some people. But I don't get anything done at home because I'm never there. But I think I'm trepidated. That's why I had tarpaulin on my roof for about four or five years, maybe even longer. Because my roof blew off, and I put it. A builder, the Vitellini boys, they came and put a tarp. They heard me. I said my roof's gone, and they put a tarp on my roof, and I left it there because I didn't know anyone, and I like to know somebody that, you know, I don't. You know, you'd like to, so I don't get anything done. And now I look around and I think there's so much work to be done, and there's so many people. And then you have, on top of that, you have the decimation that's happened in Brisbane and Queensland and Gympie and in New South Wales and stuff. And there's so much work to be done there. And there's the Blaze Aid camps and so much work to be done. And I don't know where we're going to get the people from. You there? He's not there. He's gone. Is he gone?
I'm here.
Oh, you're there.
No, you're dead right, Mark. I mean, that's just all the emergency work.
Yeah.
And then there's all the work in the pipeline, just the standard stuff people want in their houses done. And there's more of that than what we can get through as well. So,
and then you've got a shortage because of the, you've got, you know, the petrol shortages and the price of everything going up, and then that's if you can get stuff. And you hear the price of containers now. To buy, do you hear the bloke who had a he bought some containers, you know, 5-10 years ago for $2,000 each, and he built stables out of them? Well, now if you want to buy a container, try $10,000, or you know,
it's just incredible.
So yeah. I don't know, Dougie. Good luck with are you going to catch a flathead?
Mate, we just actually the main reason I called. We just landed a 850 millimeter one, so 85 centimeter fish.
Right.
Which I've got my fingers crossed is going to win us the biggest flathead.
Win you the comp.
I hope so. Yeah, it's a good fish, a big one.
Dougie, I'll keep in touch. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. All the best, Maka.
See you, mate. Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.